Well, good morning. So glad to see you all here. And thank you for the women who made the shift, because it's just so much nicer to be able to look out and see all of your faces. I love what we just had in our time of worship, and it's so wonderful because when we were singing the first song about Lord, prepare me to be a sanctuary, I was immediately thinking, and I don't know exactly where it is, but I think it's Exodus, where the Lord says, and I will be to you a sanctuary. And I was just thinking about that and loving that. And then with what Anne's saying, it's like the perfect message for all of us. And there is nothing like experiencing the Lord as our sanctuary. Once we really sense the reality, you know, that He is in us, we are in Him. We are sheltered by Him all day long. It is a life changer. We've been talking every week about Psalm 9 in the 10th verse, where it says, those who know your name will trust in you, for you, Lord, have never forsaken those who seek you. And we've been emphasizing, or the Lord has really been emphasizing, the importance of us to know Him. To not just have, you know, the biblical instruction, as important as that is, to be here on Sundays, to be here on Wednesdays, to be growing in the knowledge of the Word, all of that is part of it. But to know Him is a life changer. And I love what Paul said in Philippians 3, where he says, I consider everything a loss compared to the surpassing greatness of knowing Christ Jesus, my Lord. Knowing Him. And you know, it's not some, there's not a formula. It's just pressing in. It's spending time with Him. It's saying to Him, Lord, I want to know you. And then watching how the Lord will reveal Himself to you in greater measure on a regular basis. Because as you seek Him, it says, if you seek me with all of your heart, I will be found by you. And that's what the Lord wants for each one of us. So it's not for just some of us. It's for all of us. He's available to all of us. And I just love that. For those of you who were here last week, you know that this is Jackie Kamahoa-Hoa. And you heard the beginning of the story that she is continuing on today. Now, if you were not here last week, it's even possible you don't know that these teachings are going to be now available online. If you go to the Athe site and then to Women's Ministry, and then you scroll down and it says, I think, other teachings, something like that. You click on it and up will come the recent teachings that we have had, going back to the October 15th women's event, to our Christmas dinner message, and then I think this is the fifth week, to the messages we've had here as well. So that's what makes it so wonderful. As much as I want all of you here, because there's nothing that quite replaces corporate worship, being able to be together, to worship the Lord, to get to know each other. You can't match that. But if you're a working woman or you have sick kids at home and you have to stay at home, this is a means of at least staying linked with us and knowing what is happening. So if you were not here last week, I encourage you to listen online to this sharing that Jackie had last week, because it's really, really wonderful. And I know it's going to be wonderful this week too. In fact, it's going to be so great that I'll tell you right now, we are extending it for 3 weeks. Jackie told me when I asked her if she'd share, she, even though she was reticent about getting up in front and sharing, she said, and I said, so do you think you could do it? She says, oh my goodness, I'm just thinking, how will I ever stop? You know, because she said there is so much to share. Because what Jackie is sharing is the story of the journey she and her husband Brian have had with their wonderful, wonderful son Ryan. And so I think that's all I need to say, except for let's just say a little prayer for you. Lord, we do just come to you thanking you for Jackie's willingness, Lord, for her surrender to you, that she would sit here this morning just sharing what you have done in her life, Lord, what you have done through wonderful Ryan. Lord, I know it has been the desire of her and Brian's heart that you would be seen in all that takes place in their son's lives, that you would be glorified in his life and in their lives. And Lord, for those of us who know this family, we know that you have answered that prayer and are answering it. So we thank you for that. So Lord, even as Jackie shares now, give us ears to hear, not just the words that she speaks, but those things that you are speaking to us personally. We thank you in advance in Jesus' name. Amen. Jackie.
Okay. Maybe this is I should close her. This up. Yeah. Okay. This is not my friend, this thing, but I will make it. Let's see. I need to begin by, I was thinking I would just kind of recap a little bit of Ryan. Just to kind of give you a taste of Ryan today as I got ready to walk out the door. He said, so Mom, it's all about me, right? You're going to talk all about me. So that is Ryan in a nutshell. The world centers around Ryan. So, but anyway, to start with, Ryan is our fourth child, and he was born with a condition called WEGR. It's the acronym of Wilms tumors, kidney cancer, aniridia. He has no pupil, or no iris, all pupil. The G stands for a lot of genitalia issues, and the R stands for retardation. last week, I kind of shared a little bit about the little bombshells that kind of came to us one by one, one being that he would be blind or partially blind, that he would be anywhere from mildly severely retarded, and that he would he had a 50% chance of cancer before he was five by virtue of the embryonic cells flare the tumors, and so we were kind of keeping our eyes on that. All those things happened. As time evolved, we began to see that he does have some sight. He is legally blind. We also found that it was clear he was delayed in a lot of areas, but nowhere near as bad as what we as humans tend to do, which is think the worst when we're given that news. And so he's pretty high functioning for the most part. And then I think I left with him being diagnosed with cancer. He was diagnosed with kidney cancer at 5 months of age. And we went through, it was a hard decision by virtue of genetics and all that stuff, but we did it, and he made it through really pretty uneventfully. It was probably, you know, more of a challenge. I don't know, kids are pretty resilient, but it was long nights and a lot of enduring times, but all in all, he didn't have a lot of side effects to the chemo, so we got through that fairly well. In that time, we were just trying to just focus on doing life with a sick child and three other kids that needed our attention as well. You know, God gives us what we need in those moments, and he tells us over and over again that his grace is sufficient. And in that time, we had went through a lot of the chemo, he did well. We were finishing up, and we were just rejoicing in the moment in that all was good. He didn't have any major repercussions from it. Sometimes you can have stuff that's residual from chemotherapies and stuff, but all in all, he did well. So we were totally thrilled. And keep in mind that we had just moved up to Oregon when his little world began to kind of go crazy. We had a lot of doctor appointments and nonstop kind of just trying to juggle things. So we were renting a home at the time. He finished his chemo, and we began our journey to try to find a house, and kind of we got to breathe a little bit. And we bought our home and got the big backyard and promised the kids the dog, and we got all the things that we were hoping for, and we were just loving life, and it was great, you know, what we had been through. And Ryan was doing awesome. By this time, he's walking and running, and he's doing well. And so life was good. And again, like I said, it was just the opportunity to just say thank you, Lord, for all that he had brought us through. And even though we knew he had disabilities and all that, he was just such a treat for all of us. So it was right before his second birthday, I was going in for, well, to back up a little bit, I think I mentioned that he was born with glaucoma, and he was ready for surgery before he was diagnosed with a cancer. So we went back to, we had to put the glaucoma on hold, obviously, because of the cancer. And so we went back to get his glaucoma taken care of, and the doctors were shocked. They couldn't believe it, that his glaucoma had disappeared in a way that they said they'd never seen a child born with glaucoma and have it just disappear. So initially they thought it was the chemotherapy. Maybe it was something medical, you know, thing that they found. But they found no correlation, and we just know that it was totally the beginning of the miracles that God has performed in Ryan. So therein was the beginning of Ryan's, he was well with the glaucoma, and we were doing awesome. And then I took him in right before that to have him be checked for his kidneys. We had to keep tabs on it because they had said up until 5 years he would still have this chance of more cancer. So sure enough, I took him in, and we found another mass in the other kidney. That was a difficult day for me. I was by myself again, and I remember just feeling really overwhelmed this time. It was a little bit different. It's like Judy said before last week, when you know you're going through a journey, you don't know where you're going, you kind of blindly go. This time I knew where I was going, and it was a hard thing to grasp, to know that again we would have to go through what was not an easy time. But I remember thinking, Lord, I don't think I can do this. It just seemed overwhelming to me. And in that moment, I remember him telling me clearly, you know, that his grace is sufficient. And he says, my grace is sufficient for you in 2 Corinthians 10, or 12, 10, 8 and 10. My grace is sufficient for you I can't read because I don't have my glasses on. I thought I could read it. Anyway, my grace is sufficient for you. And and is made perfect in my weakness. And therefore, I will boast in all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may be known. I need my glasses. I think I can fake it, but I'm over 50. Doesn't work. So anyway, therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me. And that is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in the weaknesses and insults and hardships and persecution and in difficulties. For when I am weak, he is strong. And in my moment of fearing that I couldn't do this again and I wasn't sure, he just reminded me that he was going to be there with me and he was going to strengthen me in that moment. And he did. And I just remember in my little mind of picturing pulling up my bootstraps again and saying, okay, God, I'm going to do this because you're going to carry me. And I began that journey in that moment and knew that it was going to be okay, that we were just going to go through it. And he was going to hold on to me like a child. And Judy spoke a couple of weeks ago about going through storms, and that's kind of what I picture each time we've been through stuff, is that like a child holding on to their parent's hand and in the midst of a storm. And even though you don't know how the storm is going to end, you have that comfort of knowing that your parents are there and they're holding on, they're protecting you, and they're caring, and they're with you in the midst of all of it. So that's what we did. We held on tight, and we pulled up our bootstraps. So we began the process. It was clear that Ryan's mass was too big and too close to the function of the kidney that they could not go in and remove it. So they had to try to shrink it before they could go in and do that because they were fearful they would damage his kidney. And he only had one, keep in mind. So we knew that he was not a candidate for a transplant because back in the day, I don't know what it is now, but back then you had to be, I think, tumor-free for at least a couple of years. So he had just finished chemo probably 6-7 months before. So we decided that at that time the doctors thought we need to just shrink this tumor as much as we can and then try to go in and remove it. So unfortunately, with that, we had to do some tremendously intense chemotherapy, much harder than the last one. Ryan, it was interesting, on a side note, one of the drugs that they were going to give Ryan, one of the chemos, was a drug that when Ryan was 12, my husband, his father died of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And it was back in the day when the chemotherapies were very experimental, and his dad didn't die of non-Hodgkin's. He was going through the chemo, but the same chemo that saved Ryan's life killed my husband's father by virtue of the heart. It's very toxic to the heart and damaging. So what they found through Ryan's dad was that there can only give so much of this or else it will, you know, it can damage your heart. So I thought it was kind of an interesting side note that through Brian's dad and what they found, Ryan was able to help be saved. Anyway, so Ryan had to go through some really hard drugs, and then one of them was a very experimental drug that they didn't really know much. They knew that it was going to be intense, and we knew his counts were going to drop significantly, but we didn't know to what degree and when. And it just so happened he had, we had had two different bouts where we almost lost him, and one in particular was he got very septic. His numbers dropped really quickly, and he had a fever, and I thought I could wait until the morning to take him in to see the doctor, and the doctor said, never again, don't do that, and I didn't want to wake him in the middle of the night, but it turned out that he was like 2 hours from death. The doctor said if we had waited any longer, his numbers were so low that his counts, that he would have not made it. So anyway, I learned a lot through that. But then we went on to get through the chemo. We became very routine with our hospital stays. They were in and out a lot. And keep in mind, we had three other kids that we had to try to juggle and endure, try to make as normal as possible. Leilani was our oldest, and by this time she was approximately 9 and 9 and a half. So it was a routine of when I would go to the hospital with Ryan, I would stay for the week, and then Brian would pop in the middle of the week and let me go home and reprieve and get new clean clothes. And keep in mind, we're still up at the whole old Dornbecker, which is the top floor of OHSU, and we share a bathroom and we sleep on a chair. It was so I would go home, Brian would come, and in the meantime, he would be there with the kids, and Leilani would kind of have to grow up a lot quicker than she was. Should have, in that she would be the one that would get the kids out the door in the morning. Malia was 5 and Derek was 8, and Brian would make the lunches and have things ready, and then he would go on to work, but Leilani kind of had to make sure they were ready to go and out the door. So it became a routine. We kind of knew what we were going to do, but one particular time I remember Derek was homesick, and his numbers were, he had just had chemo a week before, and just like Cammy shared, your numbers drop, and, you know, after about a week or two after having chemo. So I knew that he had spiked a fever through the night. We had to get him to the doctor that morning, and Derek was homesick. So I had to bring him with me, and the kids by this time had never really watched us with admissions with Ryan, and so they never saw the traumatic stuff that takes place with the IVs and, you know, getting him settled in and stuff. They always would be there after he was stable, but this particular day, Derek had to watch a lot of those dynamics, and I remember Brian, I had to call Brian and let him know, and so he came and beelined from work to the hospital. By this time, we had found that Ryan had, his numbers were very, very low. He had very little immune system to fight. That what we found was pneumonia, and it was he was in a very precarious position, and that they weren't sure that the antibiotics were going to be strong, he would be able to endure it along with no immune system. So the reality was that we were it was a life or death situation. When Brian came in, it was clear at that time that he was pretty distraught. He began to cry and was crying with Ryan over Ryan's crib. And Derek, I remember us, keep in mind that just prior to this, we had had the first bout of Ryan's cancer. We got involved with a support group for children with cancer, and we felt it was important for our kids to understand that there were other kids in the world, siblings who had to endure this kind of stuff themselves. And so we got involved, and we were on the support, we were on the board and a chairperson for activities and that kind of thing. So we got really connected with a lot of families that were going through a lot of what we were going through. And what I did learn in that was that a lot of times us mothers, we are by nature nurturers, and we tend to be the mother hen and want to protect and take care of our children, which is all good, but there's a point where we tend to forget that when you have a really sick child, there's other family members that you can't forget, and you have a husband who has needs, and you have to remind yourself that even though they don't speak, I don't know about you guys, but my husband isn't an overly emotional kind of, he doesn't share a lot of that, but he internally has a lot of those same emotions. They just don't share them. So I remember watching a lot of families not only break up and split up, but that and close the husbands out of their caretaking of those sick children because the mothers just felt they needed to be the ones to only do that. And I remember making a conscious decision that I knew that I did not want to be that way, and I knew it was important for Brian to have that connection with the kids when they were sick for whatever matter. And so I that particular day, I remember Brian being pretty distraught with Ryan, and I knew he needed that connection with him, even though we knew things were really unsettling and I didn't really want to leave, but I knew I had to get Derek back to our house, get things settled and ready for a long stay in the hospital. So I opted to leave Brian with Ryan, and I knew he needed that time with him. And it's just a side note for you moms to be aware of your husbands, that they truly do need to have that time and connection with their kids, even though they might not speak about it and say it. And as well as your other kids, they need that nurturing and time too. So I went home, and I was driving Derek home, and I remember him saying to me, "Mom, I never seen Daddy cry. I never seen Dad cry." And I remember in the midst of a hard, hard time when we didn't know whether Ryan was going to live or die, I remember thinking, thank you, God, that in that moment, something good came from that, and that Derek never has ever forgotten that it's okay for big, strong men to cry, you know, and that the love of a father to their child is carries him. And to this day, he's 30 years old, and he never has forgotten that moment. And I thought, you know, he'll carry that all of his life. And it was a good moment in a hard time. And that's what God does. He gives us those little treasures that we know we can learn from and take with us, even when things are not always what we want them to be. So anyway, we went through that. And of course, Ryan, as usual, got through it. He's like our little ever-ready bunny rabbit. He just keeps going and going. So he made it through, and we got him home. And, of course, I think I might have shared last week, but every time we'd come home from the hospital, it was like a big celebration. And we'd have pizza. The kids loved pizza. And we'd pull out the guitars and music. And Ryan loved to dance, and he loved music. It was truly his comfort. In fact, there were times back in the day we didn't have CDs. It was the tape players. We would take his tape player everywhere he went, and for every surgery he went into, rather than a teddy bear or a blanket, which typically most kids prefer for their comfort, Ryan's was music. And so we would take his little tape player, and the nurses with surgery and that sort of thing, after he would come out of recovery, you go in this room. Those of you that have had surgeries, you know there's a recovery room, and there's a lot of people in there that have just come out of surgery, and so anesthesia. And the nurses would keep that little boom, that little CD box for Ryan, or not CD, but tape player. And because he was legally blind too, we didn't know how scared he would be or how all of that. So they would turn on his CD, his little tape player, and little praise music would be singing. And we always thought it was comical that I'm certain there were many people that were coming out of anesthesia that thought they had died and went to heaven because they were listening to a lot of praise music. So, because it's a very quiet place except for the beeps of the EKGs and stuff. So anyway, that, so Ryan, we just would celebrate every time he'd come home. And it was an awesome time in that, you know, we just always knew that it was another victory and another time that we got through another hard time. And how good God is, you know, he just carries us. Then we made it through those times of with Ryan, and then it was we ended up eventually right before he was finishing chemotherapy. I was in the kitchen making lunches and getting the kids ready for school, and all of a sudden I heard this. What you mothers all know when your kids are excruciating pain and you hear that blood-curdling scream or cry, and I knew something was really wrong, and I ran back to the back bedroom, bathroom, and here was Ryan on the floor, and he had slipped and did the splits on a wet floor and broke his... we didn't know it at the time. I knew something severe was wrong, and so I had to leave the kids and go to the hospital, and... we found that he had broken his femur bone, which is the biggest bone in your body, those that don't know it, and he was in excruciating pain. We ended up having to put him in a traction for 3 weeks, and mind you, he was still going through chemo, so he had a little line, a central line, he had tubes hanging out of him, but they had to stop the chemo in order to try to let the body heal for the bone, for his bone to heal. He was in this traction, and it was probably one of the most difficult times that I know I had in terms of ready to release him, because the pain was horrible. It was a horrible, horrible time. I remember, because what they have to do is when your bone breaks, all those muscles go way in like a rubber band, and then they have to pull them out and in order to set the bone. So all this pulling was horrible, horrible pain for him, and it seemed as though the narcotics weren't doing the trick initially. And I remember being at the window, looking out the window and just praying, you know, Lord, go ahead and take him. I can't watch him suffer, you know, through all the pain. But he finally, the pain medicine started to work, and he got through it. And so, mind you, this is Ryan, in that when he's not hurting, thank you, he is just like lights up a room. He's like total joy. With all the nurses, the phlebotomists, he tells them what a great job they're doing when they poke him. And they're like, nobody ever tells us we do a great job. But Ryan does that. So he was just truly a joy, even when he was in traction. We pulled from him and his attitude. So we got through that, and he ended up, had to have a body cast on for 3 months. Keep in mind, Ryan was a perpetual motion little boy. He ran to and fro, and it was almost like a stimulation to his eyes because he would like to look from the side profile. He has no macula, or his macula is, he can't see any detail straight on, so his side profile is just as good. So he would do these odd little things with his eyes, but it was almost like his stimulation. So he would always be running to and fro. That's how he ended up getting the splits. But he ended up, I remember just prior to the body cast thinking, I don't know how he's going to do this, you know, in a body cast. He's going to go crazy, or maybe I'm gonna go crazy, because when a child's not happy, you know, they make you not very happy. So I remember thinking, I don't know how we're gonna do this. He's gonna go crazy, not being able to move, and being maybe claustrophobic. I didn't know, and I remember thinking, Lord, you know, how are we gonna do this? And you know, he just made it clear to me that, you know, just do not be afraid. I am with you, and we're gonna get through this. So I was feeling quite anxious about it, and he got the body cast. They had to put him under for a body cast, and we got that on him, and he had one little leg open. This part was just open, so he had one leg open, and the rest was all straight, and he had a little hole for his central line, and it was quite a sight. But as it turned out, we got home, or we were getting ready to go home, and the doctors had given him some laxative by virtue of the fact that all the narcotics that he was under for pain had causes a lot of problems with your digestive system. So long and short of it is, we were waiting for a bowel movement to happen, and they said, oh, he'll be fine when he gets home. He'll have one. So Brian and I pulled up to the driveway after he got this nice new, brand new cast put on. And all of a sudden, both of us got a whiff, and we were like, oh, it's there. There's that bowel movement. So we got him, went back to get him, and it wasn't just a bowel movement. It was like diarrhea, mess, he was just it was all over. And I thought, oh, no, you know, and there was no way we were going to take him back to have to get another body cast put on. So we cleaned him up the best we could, and again, like I tell you, there's many times you just have to have a sense of humor in some hard times. So we just laughed and said, okay. Brian said, well, you know, we just won't have much company because nobody wants to come around the cesspool. And so we just thought, okay, that's the way it'll be. And so we ended up getting through that. Ryan was amazing. Never skipped a beat. Just combat crawled wherever he needed to go. He just was as happy as he was before he ever had a body cast on. So that was pretty amazing to me, and totally another God thing. Then we ended up, we got the cast off, we finished his chemo, we were getting ready to try to finish his chemo, and we found that there was no shrinkage to the tumor, that he had already been through all this intense chemo, and they knew that they had to go in and try to move this mass. So we were braced for the worst in that they knew that he could not have a transplant. So we had a dialysis team in the wings waiting. And the surgeons were pretty sure that they weren't going to be able to do this, but they were willing to try. so we, again, were in those moments of just bathing in prayer and just asking God to please do another miracle, and that this would be a moment that we could just, again, give him the praise for watching Ryan get through this. So sure enough, we went through it. And I don't know if many of you know surgeons, but they're typically not overly animated personalities. But after this transplant, after they went in to remove the mass, they came to the waiting room totally ecstatic in that they were able to salvage his kidney. And so we were all just rejoicing and thankful that we had gotten through that again. Ryan had less than half a kidney, and he was living on less than half a kidney, but you can do that. So it's an amazing body that we have, that God has created. So they told us he would definitely need a transplant eventually, that he would lose his kidney. But because of all the intense chemotherapy he had been on, it did a lot of damage to his kidney. So we were prepped, but we weren't really focused on that. We just were rejoicing in that moment, and that was that he was good, and we weren't gonna cross the bridge when we had to. And many people would ask us, "What are you gonna do? Who's gonna give a kidney?" And we would be, you know, I always remember just saying, you know, God tells us in his word that, you know, today has enough worries of its own, and I'm not going to focus on that and worry about it. I'm just going to focus on today. So time went on, and we had 4 years where Ryan did great. He was doing really well, and everybody kind of, the nephrologist had pretty much kind of overlooked keeping tabs on his kidney, and we were just thankful that he was doing well. By this time, we were able to kind of be a normal family and get our kids into sports and do the things that you love to do with your kids. Up until then, they had been pretty much, our focus had always been pretty much Ryan. Even though we always try to make a point to take the kids on dates, and Brian would take the girls and I would take Derek, and we, you know, tried to give them their one-on-one, but it was always a challenge to juggle that amidst a lot of doctor and hospital stays. So this was a really joyous time for us in that things were good. We began to coach volleyball. We both were a volleyball family. We loved volleyball. Derek, my son, was a football player and wrestled, and Ryan became... we began to notice that Ryan could see color, movement, and contrast. So those are huge things for the sports world, in that he was actually following sports and he could see it on TV and follow balls. And so he discovered the world of sports outside of just music wasn't just his thing. So it was a good thing, because we're a huge sports family and God just knew where to plant him, because that's what we love to do. But unfortunately, we kind of created a competitive monster. Paula knows, Judy knows, he loves to compete, even if it's just simply Yahtzee. He's all about it. So I remember one time in particular, my son was playing football, high school football, and Ryan, the cheerleaders were all out there watching the football game, and pretty soon they heard the crowd getting into it, and they turned around, and it was Ryan cheering, leading the cheer for the whole bench, for the whole crowd. And so the cheerleaders realized at that juncture they needed to give him some pom-poms, because he was a better cheerleader than they were. But that's Ryan. That's what he loves to do. So life was good, and we were just enjoying all of the celebrations and little victories that he was showing. And he was in school, and you know, he was in a special needs classroom, but he was still quite popular. The kids just loved him, the regular mainstream kids. There came a point where I was, because of all the, I'm assuming it had to do with the neglect that I put upon myself when he had his body cast. And you kind of neglect yourself when your kids need, and I knew my body mechanics were good when I was carrying him. And anyway, long and short of it is I was struggling with a back problem for a long time, and about 3 years in, and then I finally realized I just needed to get this back surgery done, and they said I was a good candidate. So I was literally being wheeled in to have my surgery done, and Brian was with me, and it was the first surgery I'd ever had, and I was IV'd up and the whole shebang, and then my oldest son Derek came in to tell us that Ryan was being admitted as we speak. And I remember we didn't know why. He didn't know why, but they said he needed to be admitted. There were some issues going on. And so my immediate moment was this sense of, you know, I just wanted to jump off the gurney and do. But it was pretty much the last I remember is Brian gave me a kiss and I was out. I think they just knew they needed to kind of plug me with a little more meds to finish the job. And as I think back, I'm so thankful that that happened the way it did, because I would have never gone through the back surgery if I'd known what was ahead, which is that Ryan, I jumped from my bed to his the next day after the surgery. And through diagnostic work, we found his kidney was failing, and it was failing really quickly and acutely. And it was he was in a position where his heart was being threatened, because when your kidney isn't functioning, you have the potassium issues, and his blood pressure was extremely high. I kind of knew it was school. It was around September, and we were going through. He seemed kind of poopy, a little tired, and he didn't have a great appetite, but I thought, you know, new schedule, all that, I kind of looked at it that way. Well, obviously that was the beginning of him starting to become very sick. And so it was clear he needed a kidney transplant. By then he was a candidate, thank goodness. But they couldn't wait for the transplant. They had to get him on dialysis like ASAP. Typically, if you're on a dialysis, you get a PICC line and, you know, you get healed up and then you start your dialysis. Well, we couldn't wait for that. We had to put a central line in him and he had to have it done like, I think it was within 3 days of when I was home from the hospital after we'd just gotten out of the hospital. So I wasn't supposed to drive, but, you know, I did what I had to do because you're a mom. And you, so I drove back and forth to OHSU and we would get hooked up to the what we call the blood machine. Ryan would show up at 10 o'clock in the morning and the nurses would say, because Ryan loved whatever it is that says come on down, Price is Right. And so they would, and he always watched it at 10 o'clock when he'd hook him, they'd hook him up to the machine. And so he'd walk in and they would say, come on down, Ryan. And so it was a routine. And so we tried to have fun even in the midst of, you know, some hard times. So anyway, we got through that. Ryan, the dialysis was very, very difficult. It was, his lines would always kink. They wouldn't work. We would have to go down. Literally, he was dying before our very eyes. He was shrinking. I mean, he was not eating hardly at all. We couldn't hardly get him to eat. What we could get him to eat was Taco Bell soft shell tacos. He loved those. So we, every day after dialysis, we would stop by Taco Bell, and I would always we would get him soft shell tacos. And I always thought I should get some stock into that place because we put a lot of money in there. But anyway, he was really, really sick, and he wasn't supposed to. We were scheduled to have a transplant on December of 1995. Well, the surgeon, his Dr. Barry, which is he's the top dog in the state of Northwest, actually, for transplants, and very renowned, and he was kind of like a god at OHSU. I mean, he had a little entourage of doctors that would follow him and split shine shoes, and everybody knew when Dr. Barry spoke, it was like E.F. Hutton. They listened. Everybody just stopped. And so he was very respected, and but yet kind of like a god that people didn't really ask him for anything because it was like he was the boss. So it just so happened that Ryan was going through all this this dialysis, but it wasn't working very well for him, and he was really very sick. And it happened that Dr. Barry had a thing where you could not, he would never have a surgery, a transplant for a child the same day. He would never do a multi-day surgery. So, and that children were totally going to be one surgery for that day. Well, unfortunately, somebody scheduled the surgery so that he was right along with another young man, and we found out that this pretty close to when Ryan was supposed to be having a surgery. We were all just anxious for this to happen because we knew he was so sick and he needed it. And so it just happened that I was going to be giving my kidney. We knew that. They said it's harder on the donor than the recipient. We had a line of people wanting to give their kidneys, the school teachers, to friends and family, but Brian and I were the best match for Ryan. Yet we knew that he was obviously Brian needed to work, and they said usually it takes 3 months of recovery for a donor. That was back in the day when they cut your, it's a huge incision, all the way from the top of my back all the way down through. Nowadays it's a small little incision, but back then it was significantly huge. So the recovery was really hard. They said it was harder on us than the recipient. So I was just subbing at the school at the time, so we felt I was going to be, it made more sense for me to do it. And my biggest concern was not so much giving my kidney, but it was the idea of not being with Ryan if something were going wrong, because I had always been right by his side. But the doctors assured me that if something went awry, that they would make sure I got there. And back in the day, they kept the donors at the Veterans Hospital, which is over the Sky Bridge from OHSU. And so it happened that to back up. So anyway, the dialysis, we ended up having, knowing we needed this done like ASAP. Well, they found that there was a mismatch in the scheduling and that this man technically was before Ryan. He was already on the donor list before Ryan. And you all know how that goes. You just usually have to wait your turn. Well, the nurses in dialysis were really quite concerned when they found out that there was this problem in scheduling, and because we knew Dr. Barry wouldn't do the child surgery at the same time. So we were going to have to be bumped for a later time. And the nurses were like, this can't happen. You know, Ryan needs this done like now. And everybody was pretty like kind of in a scurry over this can't be. And so it was just an interesting moment. It was totally it's what Brett would call a godowance. And that, that particular day I went down to the cafeteria and that day they had, I feel like I'm really old in that day. Anyway, they had a area where in the cafeteria where it was all just doctors and the medical. They had a separate area to eat, so they didn't have to sit amongst us peasants. So, but Dr. Berry, for some reason that day, I was sitting there and Ryan was up in dialysis, and I looked across the table and there he was. And I just thought, you know, in my heart, I just knew I had to speak to him, but yet I knew he was kind of like the bomb, you know, so it's like, I don't really know if I should talk to him, but I felt I knew I needed to. So I went over to him and I said, Dr. Berry, you know, I heard that there's a concern over the scheduling and that Ryan, you know, they're going to bump Ryan back. And I don't know if you know, but he's really struggling with, you know, the dialysis isn't working and very well, and he can't, his lines are keep getting clogged and da da da. And I just presented that to him, and I said, I don't know if, you know, anything can happen, but, you know, we're all concerned that this is not, we don't know how much longer he can hang on. And I just left it there, and he didn't say much. He was a very stoic man and doesn't say a whole lot, but anyway, he just said, kind of nodded his head and, like, thank you for sharing, and I left it at that. And then I went upstairs a little bit later, got there in the dialysis, and the nurses were like, can you believe it? They changed the schedule. Ryan's on schedule. They bumped the other guy and put Ryan. And I was like, thank you, Lord. Because it was totally, Dr. Berry just did his magic and he changed everything. And I was so totally thankful. And I just believe that it was a moment that we knew was totally God. So we got through that. He ended up getting to stay on schedule. We got actually to meet the young man and his father that was going to give him his kidney. They were in dialysis at the same time, and they were totally, ironically, they were a Christian couple, a man and his son, and they were just thrilled to be able to do that for Ryan and be bumped for Ryan. So anyway, we got him his kidney. We began the workup, and anyway, I obviously was the donor. The day of the transplant was another very hard moment in that they let me stay in his room with them, which was the first time OHSU ever did that. We were the first. They said we had the fastest workup they'd ever had in OHSU history. And so within 7 weeks of when I had my back surgery, I gave Ryan my kidney. And but it's totally God thing too, because who knew? I didn't know, and I would have never had back surgery, but it was clear that that was the way it needed to be. So we ended up that morning, we got ready they put us both on our gurneys, and it was one of those days that our kids, everybody was up there, my kids and family, and then Brian was there. And I remember vividly as the nurses came to put us on the gurneys and start taking us to our prospective operating rooms, Ryan began to cry and reach out for me, and I couldn't be there. And I remember the kids were crying. Brian was crying. The nurses were crying. Ryan was crying. And I remember looking up at Brian, and Brian's trying to be strong for Ryan. And yet for me, I remember thinking how hard it had to have been for him, because all the focus was on me and Ryan, you know. But here it was Brian that had to be so stoic and strong, knowing that both two of his loved ones were possibly he might not see again, or we didn't know how things would go. But it's just a reminder to us women that, you know, our husbands are, you know, God gave them to us for a special reason, and the reality is that they do have emotions, and they are you know, they're strong for us, but they still are, you know, they still have emotions. So anyway, that was a hard moment, but we got through it. We went through the transplant. My transplant went quite well. And Ryan's, unfortunately, prior to this, some of you might try to understand how we talked to our kids in regard to all of this, because they were fairly young at the time. I think Leilani was like 13, and Malia was 7 or 8, and Derek. So we would always stress to them every time, whenever Ryan was on death's door, that, you know, this is, you know, we don't know how this is going to end, if he's going to choose to take him or not. But the one thing we do know is that, you know, he tells us that it's just a crossing over. It is just one day he's going to be in heaven, and one day we get to be with him again. And that, you know, to live is Christ and to die is gain, and that it's his gain, it's our loss, but he won't be suffering anymore if that's God's will. So, you know, Philippians 1:2 was just echoed time and time again in our world, by virtue of the fact that we just knew if that was God's will, that it would ultimately be okay, because we'd see him again. As we began to, after I came out of my surgery, it was about 2.5 hours, and Ryan's, we were all waiting anxiously for Ryan, and typically it's about the same amount of time to put a kidney in as it is to take it out. But it was obvious after about 4 hours that we kept asking what's going on, and the nurses would tell us that things are fine, but, you know, they're just having to do some more things that they weren't expecting. So we kept waiting and waiting, and it was, mind you, I'm just coming to anesthesia, but I couldn't sleep because I just needed that peace that Ryan was doing well. So 1 hour went, 2 hours later, anyway, long and short, it was 10 hours before the transplant team finally came in to tell us that, you know, Ryan was doing great. He was peeing, everything. The kidney seemed to be working well, but that they had to use 15 scalpels to literally carve his little bit of kidney that was left. It had been scarred onto all of his other organs from all the past surgeries that he had had. So that's why it took so long. Dr. Berry said it was another record that we broke, and we were kind of like breaking records left and right. So we were just ecstatic and so thankful that, you know, he got through it and everything was well. So therein was, you know, one of those moments that we were, again, rejoicing. And I was able to finally go to sleep and get some rest. And Brian, my sister, stayed with Ryan so Brian could go home and get some rest as well. And in the middle of the night, the nurse began to shake me and wake me up and tell me that she has bad news and that Ryan is going into seizures and things don't look good and they need to get me over there immediately. And I remember that panic set in, you know, and my heart started racing, and I felt like, and just keep in mind, prior to this, we were bathing ourselves, obviously, in prayer, and we were saying, Lord, you know, whatever your will is, we are, you know, we know that it's not our will, but your will be done. And if this is Ryan's, if the war is ending out of all the battles that he's won, you know, we accept that, and we're thankful that we had him for the time we did. So we were kind of braced, and we had prayed and just knew that whatever it would be, that I knew ultimately, as hard as it would be, and the morning would be hard, that eventually, you know, God would carry us through it. And so it became clear that with the seizures, things were really, really unsettled. So at that moment when I had all these, my heart was racing and I was feeling so totally scared, it came back to me, you know, Joshua 9:1, and the Lord tells us in Joshua 9:1 to have I not commanded you, be strong and courageous, and do not be terrified, and do not be discouraged, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. And in that moment I said, that's right, Lord, you're with me, you're here, and whatever you've chosen, we're going to be okay with, you know, because he's yours, and we have to believe that, you know, this is your will. And at that very moment, again, that presence, that what God, what, you know, the glory of the Lord just kind of, I felt that presence of God just take me and surround me and gave me that peace that I never, it's truly a peace that surpasses all understanding, because I was like in a bubble. It was as though I was being protected from all this craziness that was around me, which was, they finally got me over to OHSU, and the surgeon, the doctors were in a frantic state, and Ryan by this time had gone into another seizure, and things were not good. My sister was crying, and Brian had made it up there. And it was a very unsettled time. They had to basically put him in a coma state to get his, from not having any more seizures. And but they didn't know why he was having the seizures. So they put him under, and he was basically sedated for 3 days. But I remember at that time, I had this peace that was crazy, because the doctors were like, are you okay? They thought I was kind of delusional, maybe from the pain medicine, but I knew exactly what was going on. It was just that God gave, he just surrounded me with his peace, and knowing that no matter what, if this was the end of Ryan's battles, then so be it. This was his will, and I was okay. It was an amazing moment. And so we got through that, and Ryan was, we were in ICU. I would come from my room from Veterans Hospital over to be with Ryan every day in ICU, and but he was still out. We didn't know what kind of brain damage. A lot of times with seizures, you can have a lot of brain damage, so that was the big concern. So they wanted to settle his brain. So I was at the VA hospital, and I would get wheeled over to be with Ryan every day, and the nurses over there were like, we'll take the woman who's never here. So they didn't have to nurse me, because I was always over at the ICU. And but anyway, we just stayed in fervent prayer and hopes that, you know, we would get some good news about Ryan. But we didn't know what was facing us, whether he would have more brain damage. Eventually, after 3 days, they decided to let him come to. And they first let him start coming to, but he still had the tube in his throat. And I remember his little eyes looking to and fro, but we didn't know what we had with Ryan. And then they took the tube out, and the nurses and doctors were in the room right alongside of us, and we were all a little bit nervous and unsettled, not knowing if we had Ryan. And in this teeny little voice, I was crappy, you know how it is after surgery, he looks at me and he says, did I do a good job? And we all just sighed, this sigh of, you know, we knew Ryan was with us, and because that's what Ryan does. He always wants to please. And so that was the beginning of another moment of rejoicing and being just very thankful for that. So am I out of time already? See, I know it. I told you. But anyway, that's kind of to sum it up.
How old was Ryan?
Ryan was 8 years old. So keep in mind, all throughout this whole time, he was in and out of the hospital majority of his life. But amazing, just a spirit that you just sit there and we would watch. Anyway, I'll fill you in on more of Ryan. You'll see a lot more next week. But anyway, it's hard to describe Ryan. I remember one time they wrote a paper article on him, and this man, the journalist, said he had described him as infectious happiness. And I thought, you know, that is so Ryan, because otherwise I don't know how else to describe him. So we'll close on that, huh?
Well,
what do you think?
Well, I was hoping, I was going to ask you to tell that, so that's perfect.
Okay.
So, gosh, it's been a couple years ago, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, 2 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Judy and I decided that we would go see Brian up at he was at Dornbecker, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The new Dornbecker.
Well, the new one, yeah.
I have to say this, that after I had...
Oh, wait, it was Kohler, actually, because he's an adult.
That's right,
that's
Kohler.
Right, yeah.
After I had had that first visit with mm-hmm. you, I was just so blown away. And I called Paula and I tell her the whole story mm-hmm. about this family that's just beyond belief, and Ryan, and all the little details of our visit. Mm-hmm. And she's kind of oohing and aahing. And then I don't know whether it was 6 months later or what, but when he was up at Kohler, And I was going to go see him again. And again, he was at a very, very bad juncture. Things were very grim. So I called Paula and I said, I'm going to go up and see Ryan. Do you want to come with me? I'll give you a chance, you know. And she said, okay. So as we're driving there, you know, we're two mothers' hearts talking about, you know, boy, how do you do this? You know, this has got to be incredible. And by the time we get to his room, we're of the mindset, both of us are just, you know, we just want to come alongside this woman. We want to let her know we love her. We, you know, and but I mean, we're ready for serious, heavy duty time, in spite of my first experience. So I had to set that up because of what followed. So go ahead.
Well, when even before you get to his room, you can hear him. It's like you don't even have to ask for the room number because you just, you can hear him like all the way down the hall. It's like, okay, no, we need to go in that room over there. And but Judy and I, we did. We walked in there and I didn't know what to expect. I mean, it's hospitals tend to be, you know, kind of a heavy place. And but we walked in and there's Jackie and her husband and you just walk in the room and the room, you can feel the Lord in their room. And you can feel the joy in that room. And there's Ryan, and he's sitting on the edge of his bed, and he, even though he's blind, his eyes sparkle, and he's got this big smile on his face. And before we even knew what was happening, we had been encouraged to play Yahtzee. And so I love to play games, and so I thought, sure, you know, I'd love to play, and so that was great. But when I play games, I'm always set up to be lose because I, it doesn't matter what game we play, or I play, you know, Ryan was rolling the fives and the sixes and Paula would roll the ones and the twos. And I don't know how many games we played, but we played like a lot.
Yeah.
But I was deemed the world's biggest loser. So, and he'd go, "You're so bad." I'm like, "Yeah, I really am." And we had so much fun in that room with him and this family, and it really, truly was like, you know, do they serve tea here? Would that be all right?
Yeah.
You know, could we just, like, stay here just for the night? We had so much fun and really didn't want to leave at all, and it was such a blessing to be there, even though I was deemed the world's greatest loser. That was okay, but we just had a tremendous amount of fun.
You were a good loser.
Well, I'm used to it.
And
so,
the thing
is,
Ryan is literally yelling, saying, "Paula, you are so bad," you know. And so we're just literally screaming. We're all laughing so hard. And all of a sudden, I kind of look at Jackie because I'm thinking, we're in the hospital, you know. And Jackie goes, "It's okay. They put us in a room where there's no one next door," you know.
They told us, "Don't stop." They're like, "You need this in this hospital.
Yes.
This is like a joyful room." And
but then things became very serious when a nurse came in and said that I can't remember if she was doing a blood draw or she was setting up an IV. It seems to me it was a blood draw. And she came in, and Ryan got kind of serious, you know, and he's saying, "Mom, I'm going to have a poke," you know. And Jackie says, yep, you are, Ryan, you know. And you could tell he was not wanting this. But Jesus will help me, right, Mom? You know, right, Jesus will help you, you know. And so then the nurse does her thing, and he goes, "Mom, Jesus, help me with my poke," you know. I mean, he has such an amazing way of communicating. There's this purity in him that just so blesses you, you
know.
Simple
faith.
It is. It's just amazing, you know. So this is why I knew that we couldn't ask her to just figure it out and get it done today. Because
what she did, she just got me up here and got me hooked, and now I have to finish. So it wasn't my plan.
But next week we also have another little special part of all of this that I know you're not going to want to miss. So do your best to get here. It's really going to be special. Let's just say a little prayer.
Okay.
Did you want to say something?
No, I got a lot. You know, I've already spoke a lot.
No. Father, thank you so much for the things that Jackie has shared with us this day. And Lord, I know our hearts have been touched and blessed and encouraged. And Lord, I think probably all of us, no matter what awaits us today, we're going to feel like it's pretty simple compared to some of the things that Jackie and her family have walked. And yet I thank you because over and over again as she shares, you have been with her every step of the way. That is who you are, Lord. And you tell us in our most horrific and frightening moments to be not afraid, to be of good courage. You remind us that you're with us. I thank you for that bubble that Jackie experienced. I thank you for that peace that she walked in. I know that had to have been communicated to everyone around her. Lord, just continue to have your way with this family and for the things that you're going to do in our lives because of what we've heard this day. Lord, have your way, we pray. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, you need to go right for your kids. Lord bless you.